welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on this fine station. And then podcasting on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Player FM, Blueberry, and a bunch of others that folks are linking to us, or we're being linked to them, whatever the case might be. People are listening. And as of this program, we're looking at around 8,700 listens over the last year and a half, a little over a year and a half. And we are very grateful. And it's just wonderful to be able to bring these programs to you. I love doing these programs. When I'm not doing them, I just don't feel complete. I'm serious about that. And I really look forward to these interviews. It's a frustrating week when, and I've had this happen, I'll have four or five interviews scheduled for the week. And as the week progresses, I get emails, oh, so-and-so had a family emergency. And of course, you've got to take care of family first. So that's not a problem. We'll reschedule. It's going to be a great interview. That's all that tells me. Anytime there's a delay, it just means that the interview is going to be better than it's just going to be better. And then the next day, the next guest can't get through due to electrical problems because they're in the middle of a storm or something like that. And then the next day, and this goes on, and I don't do a single interview that week. And it's like, man, there's something missing. Well, there's nothing missing today. So I'm very excited about this program, and I'm hoping that you will listen to the podcast. I highly recommend that you do, because depending upon the availability of our guests, you're going to want to listen beyond the 50 minutes that is allocated for the radio broadcast. So we talk about a lot more, and our guest is going to do that with us here on the program. And if you go to our missions page and you read what we're all about, and you like what you're hearing, and it resonates with you, and you'd like to support it, we would greatly appreciate any support that you can give us. We do have a PayPal and Patreon account, and we would really appreciate any support you can give us. Any denomination is welcome. We are not nonprofit, so keep that in mind, but hopefully that won't stop you as well. I've never allowed that to stop me because I've never put contributions on my taxes. But nonetheless, we hope that you will do what you can. We'll take energetic support as well. I'm really been looking forward to this program because our guest is going to be sharing with us a series of insights, I'm sure, through his latest work called Walking with My Angels. It's a true story. And my guest is Keith Leon S. And Keith, thank you so much for joining us on the program. I know that you have an unbelievably busy schedule, just like the rest of us. But we thank you for taking time.
You're welcome. It's my absolute pleasure to be here.
This is Walking with My Angels, a True Story, which is a book that is available. And it, of course, came out on the 20th of August, 2019, made available to the public. It's available in various formats. One of them, I'm curious, is it audible yet?
Soon. We're in the quality control part where they keep saying, oh, adjust the dB levels to this and send it back, and you're good to go. And then we do what they say, and we send it back, and then they go, oh, no, it's too soft. Do this. And so we've been going back and forth,
goodness,
trying to get to the whatever the sweet spot is where they call it perfect,
yeah,
and then it'll be available on Audible. So mind-blowing.
I hear you. I've been in those situations before. Over the last 40 years of my career in this business. And, you know, it does get a little frustrating, but by the same token, boy, I tell you, once it's done, once it has the stamp of approval, oh, you just feel so good. Not only that it's finished, but at what you have, I wish I could say, in your hands. Because in this case, it's digital. But nonetheless, it's just a wonderful feeling of completion. And I'm sure that you must have felt that when you finished writing the book, Walking with Angels.
Yes, and it is available on Kindle and paperback. It was just the audio piece that
so
many people had asked for. You know, my older folks and millennials, they were both like, Audible? Is it going to be on Audible?
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because when I was a kid growing up in the 60s and 70s, there was nothing, there really wasn't recordings of books, nowhere near the level of today. And I grew up, born legally blind. So I was utilizing the facilities of recordings for the blind and talking books for the blind. And that's how I got my textbooks in many instances, if it wasn't large print, as well as my recreational reading. And sometimes I would hold on to a book a little longer than they wanted because I wanted to read it again and again because it was so good. As a matter of fact, there's one. I still have the original recordings from the talking book, or maybe it was the recordings for the blind, of Autobiography of a Yogi. Now, I know that a lot of other people, Ben Kingsley, has read it. Yeah. I have that Audible as well, on cassette. on cassette. I had it on vinyl. But it ran on a turntable that ran at 1 7/8. That was the speed.
Wow.
And I would sit there and I would build models as I'm listening to not just that book, but a bunch of other books. and so today, to listen to what they call audible books it's a wonderful thing for people to do that. And when the author does it, I am guessing that you read the book, that you imbue that recording. And I want to kind of dive in this area here. We're going to get into this aspect of your angels, and we want to talk about that. But when you imbue something with your personal, individual, unique energy, like, let's just say, the audible, I mean, for someone to be listening to that has got to be, I mean, what a treat.
Mm-hmm.
What a gift.
Yeah, because everything is energy, right? And so that's what my team was telling me. They're like, nobody can read it but you. You can get the greatest voiceover artist in the world, but they didn't experience what you went through. And I go, all right, I got it.
Exactly. Exactly right. I was producing an audible book for a gal who wrote a children's book, which we dressed up with sound effects and music and so forth. And I was enthralled. I had to keep getting back into my professional mode because I kept getting drawn into the kid listening to grandma reading the book. But as I'm following along in my text, she kept changing it. And I thought, hey, she's the author. If she wants to change it along the way, that's her right, you know. And it worked just fine. It wasn't major changes, you know. But it's basically like a... it's like a play, and you know, you have the narrator maybe off to the side saying, okay, this is the scene and this is what's supposed to be happening and so forth. And then the action starts, and then the narrator might drop in another piece of information that you would not ordinarily get. So, yeah, I would agree with your team that, unless there is an extreme reason why the author can't read the book. You definitely want to do that. What, in your estimation, what's your definition of angels?
Well, for me, it literally is angels and has shown up that way, not only audibly from childhood, but have physically seen them, you know, like in the flesh. So that's my definition. But I love to say that everybody calls them something different. So I've heard this part of us that knows the answer to every question, this divine connection. I've heard called intuition. I've heard it called inner knowing. I've heard it called God, spirit, universe. I've heard it called so many things. And what I love to say is it doesn't matter what you call it as long as you call it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the piece that I'm here to bring, really the ultimate message of the whole book. I can just bottom line it for you, is that we are this physical part of us that's the body, that's the physical part, and then we are also, and can you wrap your mind around being non-physical, being energy, being an energy that's where we came from originally and decided to drop in this body. And we have connection to that source energy that already knows the answer to every question before we even ask it. And so it's really about what I call sit, ask, and listen. Is if there's a question that you have that you've been mulling around in your brain forever and you have no answer for it, And then you sit down and ask Spirit, God, universe, inner guidance, your angels for an answer. If you listen long enough, like sit in that silence and listen long enough and just keep asking the question and waiting, you will receive that answer. Mm. That usually happens in the space between two breaths, right? After you exhale between the inhale or after you inhale between the exhale, mm-hmm. It'll just pop in the answer, and you will know that, you know, there's no way I could have accessed that with my brain because I had already tried that over and over again. Mm. That's one of the ways that these angels, that I call them, show up. And once you kind of do the evocation process, if you haven't already, and say, okay, so I am absolutely open to seeing you, hearing you, receiving answers. I'm absolutely open, so show yourself to me. That's where it's like going back to old school, like we were talking before about cassettes and all that.
Yeah.
And those of you that remember the dial on the radio, when you had to turn a dial, you know, it was really like you had to go left and right and left and right, and you had to really work that dial to finally get that station tuned in to the perfect place. And once you did, it was crystal clear and it sounded wonderful. But there was work to get there, and that work was focus in the dialing. And that's what it's like with tuning into this inner guidance system that I call angels, is once you've done that evocation, once you've said, I am open, I'm willing, I'm listening, I'm watching, you know, show me all the ways that you're here for me and give me the answers, that's you fine-tuning. And once you've done that evocation, you go out into your world and you now have a focus on seeing all the ways that this shows up for you. Then you'll start to see all the things you didn't see before and how it's showing up for you each and every day, everywhere you go, over and over again.
And the best part of it is you don't have to worry about the nighttime skip.
Right.
I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, and I grew up with these little transistor radios, and I used to be able to listen to, I believe the call letters were KGO out of San Francisco. But I could only listen to it for about 30 to 40 seconds at a time because it would fade in and then fade out and then fade in and so forth. Whereas these signals that you're talking about, they don't fade in and out, unless the only exception to that would be if you are fading in and out. You're not 100% focused. It's like you just said, sit and listen to the silence you don't have distractions going on around you. Although, I don't know about you, but I've always felt like I've always been in the right place at the right time throughout my life and as well as my career. And maybe not in spite of, but maybe because of the fact that in 1 year, I kid you not, in 1 year back in the early 2000s, I think it was actually the year was 2000, I was laid off four times from four different jobs. Okay. And you think someone would get pretty darn discouraged having that happen. I've also been divorced once. I wasn't a lot of fun, but at the same time, here we are, you and I, right now, Keith, talking. I'm living here in Santa Barbara. You're living an unbelievable life of sharing your story, your life's purpose, your experiences with angels, as well as so much more. You're a book publisher, a musician, and so many other things. I'm sitting here thinking, is there a list of things you don't do that's shorter that we could say, he doesn't do these 12 things, but everything else he does? you know, I've actually come across people who have a resume of sorts like that, where it's like, okay, and so you talk about spending time listening to the silence. When do you do that? Because it seems like you're just, but here's where I was going with this. I'm sure you've probably reached a point in your life, not to say that you don't take those times to literally, physically stop and listen, but that you're so tuned in. You have gotten this down to a wonderful, I don't want to say science, but it's a process for you, because I kind of feel that way with myself, where now you can be moving through a crowd of people in an airport or a mall or something, and you get those impressions, you hear them, and, I need to go left over here. I need to go right over here. I need to stop because there's somebody coming that I need to talk to. Never met them before, probably will never see them again, but I need to be here now for them. And it's similar to what James Redfield speaks of in his Celestine Prophecy, how we have messages for one another. And you've got a message for someone. And vice versa, because as accomplished as you are, I'm sure that there are people who come across your path and or experiences that still maybe astound you and put you in a state of awe, like, oh, wow. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love what you're saying about, like, I do have a practice every morning where I sit and meditate, and I make time for that practice. And then, like you said, if I'm in a question, I have to get up and go. Then I just stay in the question, and I wait for all the ways that it shows up, and sometimes it shows up through people, right? And that's the astounding thing, like you said, when people show up and give me the exact answer that I was looking for, I go, wow, I love that. Sometimes when we're in the question, everybody has a different form of meditation. So some people would be painting, and while you're painting, ask the question. When you're painting, you're engaging in that part of you that isn't really in your mind. It's from another place. So that's a great place to get an answer to drop in. It can drop in through music. It can drop in through a speaker, somebody on the radio, just so many different ways. When you're in that question and looking for the answer, then you can see it pop up in all different ways. And I think the people that most astound me and wow me are the unexpected mentors that come along the way. You know, the my friends that are my mentors are some very well-known people that were in the movie The Secret, that I always wanted those people to be my mentors, and they are my mentors. But what I've found is that my mentors are coming to me all the time in my everyday life. And as I'm in that question, someone will just turn to me randomly, seemingly. I put that in air quotes when I say it randomly. Will turn around and just say one thing, and that one thing will be the exact answer to my question. So why did they just turn around and say that one thing and then walk away, right? Other than they were showing up for exactly that answer that I needed as my angel for the day.
You know, it's fascinating to me when I take a look at, I'm a real sci-fi fan. I love especially the Star Trek series, but Next Generation in particular. And I've shared this analogy before. I'll keep it brief. There's one character that Roddenberry created, at least I think he created it, that was in the Next Generation series that I have looked at and I've said, that right there is an example of our connectedness to one another. And our work as individuals on our own lives. And strangely enough, it's the Borg. Now, set aside the malefic aspects of the Borg, you have individuals from all over the universe. And they have been brought together and they've been hooked up, if you will, using, let's just say, Wi-Fi, to receive messages from, I don't know if it's from the collective, the whole group, or a central entity, to carry out their individual tasks. You're a publisher, a book publisher, you're a musician, you're a songwriter, singer, and on, and the list goes on. And I do what I do, and then someone over here does what they do, and then your mentors, each one of them, none of your mentors does the same thing, okay? And yet, and similar to what you just, the example you gave of this person walking up, saying that one word or phrase, and then walking away, we have messages for one another, again, a la James Redfield, and yet we're also working on putting together the puzzle pieces of our understanding of and our picture of the big picture. Now, we may never see the whole thing, but in the process of gathering these pieces and putting this together, collectively, we are working towards maybe the same thing. We don't even realize what it is that we're building, if you will, and not necessarily literally. Maybe it is just about raising our consciousness. What are your thoughts in regards to and I view it somewhat as a dichotomy, and I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with it, but your perspective on the connectedness that we share as a people on that higher level, that spiritual level.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I view as the, it's almost a paradox of sorts because it kind of gets in the way of that. But the whole concept of freedom and liberty and privacy and individuality to the exclusion of this connected, maybe the exclusion of, but anyway, those two elements, they almost seem like they're diametrically opposed. You can't have, on one hand, the individuality if you're working toward the common good, if you will. Know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. 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 I think we have the the visual is that we're not connected, right? That's and the media loves to tell us all the ways that we're different, and they love to focus on that, how we're different. That's how they're able to create wars and pit people against each other. But the truth be told, when it comes down to that energy that's in all of us and the creation and the creator, you know, we're all one, and so we're all tapped into the what I would call the one mind. We're tapped into that one thing I was talking about that isn't the physical. That's the part of us that's non-physical, and we're all tapped into that. And on the human level, if we really look down at the ways that we're the same and the way that we're different, we are definitely more alike than we are different. And then if we strip down all the layers and all the walls that we put up and get stripped down to the core essence of who we truly are, we all want one same thing, to love it, to love and be loved. Like, we want to love and we want to receive that and we want to give that. And that I believe is our purpose and why we're here and what we all absolutely have in common. And so we're all tapped into that one, and any separation is only but an appearance, what our eyes show us and what some people want to tell us. But I love, I heard a woman who is a tree person, and she talked about how underneath the soil, all the roots that go out in the forest underneath the soil, that there's a network, that they're all crossing each other, and that they're underneath their crossing in each other make their strength and make how they're able to stand when that wind is happening and they don't topple over, is that they're all connected underneath the surface, and that there's this whole network of connection with the trees. And she says it a lot more eloquently than I just did, but hearing her say that, I was like, oh my goodness, and it just really spoke to what you were talking about right now. You know, on the surface, you know, we're a tree standing there. Below the surface, we're all completely interconnected, and that's why when someone else is in pain or in fear or in something, in trauma or in anything around you, your affinity is to help immediately. You'll jump up and you'll go help that person. And I've seen it over and over again. Car accidents, people that are in a fight, you know, anything that's going on, people will just jump. Their instinct is just jump and serve, and they jump in and help. Mm-hmm. And so what is that part of us that doesn't go, no, I think I'm too busy to help that person, or that guy's bigger than me. There's no way I'm jumping in the middle of that. You know, I've seen the tiniest person jump in the middle of two people. You know, so what is that part of us that makes us want to jump and be of service to that person that we don't even know?
Yeah.
And I think that's what you just spoke to eloquently, by the way.
And another example for me, and I'd love for you to talk about this as well. I've been through, in the 80s and 90s, probably like a lot of folks, I went through a lot of personal growth programs back in the early 80s. I think it was 1980. I went through a program called LifeSpring, which was sort of an outgrowth of EST. I went through all three levels. I learned a lot from it. But one of the things that I observed, and it wasn't until probably the early 90s when I finally got a handle on it and I realized what was going on. When you first walk in the room that first night, and usually it's three nights and then a weekend, two Saturday, Sunday, full days.
Mm-hmm.
And you start looking around the room, and you made the comment earlier about, you know, we see the visual world and we're sort of distracted by it. And I'm looking at all these people and I'm beginning the process of saying, yeah, good looking person. I think I want to connect with this person and that one and that one. and this person over here, no, that's not really my cup of tea. I'm going to stay away from that person. You know, and I would begin that process of evaluating who I wanted to connect with over the next 5 days. And the interesting happening, as I'm sure you are aware, is what's coming. The people that I picked out to connect with throughout the weekend, I might have, but rarely. And the people that I became the closest to were the ones I didn't want to. And it was like the universe just kept over and over again telling me, no, you don't pick and choose. You just allow them to flow in and out of your life. You don't set up a criterion, a protocol, they got to be this high and they got to be this tall and this wide and have these attributes, et cetera, before, because my gosh, the things that I have learned from these folks has just been incredible. And we do tend, as human beings, we tend to cut ourselves off, don't we, from those people, messages, and experiences that if we're feeling impatient about moving forward in our lives, and I come across people all the time who are like that. My wife is sometimes like that. I mean, she's right now, we've been living in Santa Barbara for 13 years. She's ready to move. She's ready to go. She wants to get out there and experience, you know, get on the road with our truck and travel trailer and just explore. You know, and I'm just kind of back here going, well, you know, the universe hasn't opened the doors just yet. The door is squeaking open. It is. It's finally starting to squeak open, but it's not quite there yet. Not like when we both lost our jobs in 2006 in Phoenix. And she came to me, and this kind of goes to what you were talking about earlier. She came to me, she says, I'm scared. I feel like we're on the edge of a precipice. And of course, even at that time, I had been interviewing people such as yourself and going to these programs. And I said, well, you know, everything I've read and experienced, et cetera, says that when you're on the edge of a precipice or cliff, you do two things. You jump and you trust. But we, as human beings, we don't do that with a lot of other human beings because of our preconceived notions about body type and all of those other characteristics that we set, you know, we start, you know, putting these people over here and putting those people over there, or philosophies or politics or economics, et cetera, et cetera. Can you talk with us a little bit about that? And maybe could you offer us some suggestions on how we might better approach the world, if you will, the people in it who are in our world, our immediate world, and how we might begin the process of overcoming that or of retraining ourselves to be more, what, accepting, appreciative of, et cetera?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, first of all, I'll say that I grew up in Insight Seminars, which is Life Spring with a different name, basically. And so so I know that the very first process that we did was built to deal with exactly what you went through mm-hmm. when you're sizing people up. So that's awesome. They were dealing with that straight away. What I've learned over the years is that the people who I'm not connected to that I instantly kind of judge is the word that comes to mind for me are the people that have the biggest lessons for me, are the ones who end up teaching me the most, be it I'm speaking in a large room of people and there's and this happened over and over again, there's that person sitting in the front row with their arms folded with a scowl on their face and their legs crossed the whole time through my talk. And when I was up and coming, you know, and first out there speaking, I used to sit there and that one person would kind of have me in my head. I'm thinking, am I boring them? Do they not like what I'm saying? And I would make up all this stuff. And I didn't go on very long because what would happen is everybody would be coming up to say, oh, great, nice talk, or getting their book signed or whatever that thing was that they wanted to tell me before they left. And that person always kind of kept jumping to the back of the line, but was in the line, kept jumping to the back of the line, letting other people go. And they would always come up last, and they would always say, "Oh, my God, here's the thing that you said that really, really got me. Here's what struck me. Here's what I believe has changed my life." And they would tell me. And there was, and I, you know, part of me wants to say, "Well, tell that to your face," because the whole time I was in my head about it. But those are the people who seemingly got the most from my talk. And yet the whole talk, arms crossed, legs crossed, scowl, right? Mm-hmm. Thought they hated me. And they got the biggest message. So that got me out of my head when I was out on stage and realized that everybody is getting exactly what they need to receive. But I have found over and over again that the one who I wouldn't be connected to does have the greatest lessons for me. And my wife was just talking about this the other day. What I have learned to do in everywhere in my life where we go is I have this ability to meet people where they are. To meet people exactly where they are. So I was with a group at this thing called Philosopher's Camp, and we went to the lake one day, and there was one guy who had a spot that we just thought would be perfect spot for our group, and so we went and asked him if we could share. And that one person, you know, smoking cigarettes, smoking pot, you know, just like not necessarily a match for the group, right, I just walked over and started talking to him and talking about music, and we grew up with the same type of music, and I just met him where he was, as did my wife. And when we went to leave, and he had been drinking and was talking a lot of gibberish, you know, through that talk. But right before we left, he turned to my wife and just said this one sentence that was so incredibly profound, that she just left there going, "Wow. I think that guy was an angel. Here's what he said to me." And we were just like, both like, that is juicy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we are brought up with chatter. We brought up with judgment. The media commercials, you know, from when I was a child, it was like, "You got a ring around the collar," and all these things telling me all the things that were wrong with me. And I rarely saw a commercial that said, "You're perfect just the way you are, made in the image and likeness of the creator itself. And matter of fact, you are that. And you can tap into that anytime." Never saw a commercial that said that.
No.
It just always told me what was wrong with me, which made me look into what was wrong with others. And so that's, you know, been drilled in for so long, right? That it's just a go-to unless you do the work to undo it. And and in Insight Seminars, actually was given a tool to do that, to deal with that, what I call the little liar voice in my head that only tells me lies, never tells me the truth. And so I've used that tool a lot to be able to unprogram the part of me that judges people and to see the beauty in them and to see that they, we're really the same more than we are different, no matter the appearance.
Yeah. Extraordinary stuff. We're going to continue talking with Keith Leoness, and we're going to talk more about his book that he is here to share with us, of course. And we certainly hope that you will stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices, and we hope that you will choose to stay with us. So don't go away.
Tell me your story.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. As I've always said, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. You know, that's also the theme of my book, Keith, is, and by the way, folks, you're listening to Tell Me Your Story with Keith Leoness, and we're talking about his latest work, of course, Walk with Angels and Walk with My Angels, and we're talking about this aspect of choice. And as I was saying, it's kind of the theme of my book as well, is giving people choices. But a lot of times folks don't know what choices that they have. Have you run into that a lot in terms of people who might come up to you and say, I like what you said, but I just feel so stuck, you know, and I don't know where to go and what to do. And that whole list goes on and on and on. And it's because they haven't sort of put themselves out there, if you will, to experience other things, to learn other things for a lot of different reasons. And at the same time, you know, we see these stories on the TV all the time, these wonderful feel-good stories about these individuals who pulled themselves up by their bootstraps. They had mentors around them, but for the most part, they had to do the work, just like we do. And they were able to create and accomplish things that, oh my gosh, you wouldn't have thought of. But again, there are these other folks who they're in exactly the same boat, but for whatever reason, they just don't know what to do next.
Yeah. It's, you said the three most important words, do the work. I think that's the difference between those who are receiving the answers, those are who are doing the work of, you know, teaching others, are the ones who did the work themselves and found out, they really got clear that I can't just read the book, right? I actually, now that I read the book and I have the tools, I actually need to do the tools. And to sit down and meditate, like we talked about, or to take that meditation into everyday life with a focus of seeing and finding and discovering all the answers throughout the day, to develop an affirmation that would handle that little liar in your head, to do what the work is that's in that book that speaker just said from the stage. You know, I think of so many people who are there. What I call seminar junkies, and go to the seminar after seminar, getting tools after tools after tools, and then instead of going home and working with the tools, jumping into the next seminar because it just feels so good while you're there.
You should have heard me back in the 80s and 90s, and I was looking around the room, again, at prejudging, and I used to ask the question in my head because the same people kept showing up, it seemed like, to these different seminars and workshops. I'm going, when are these people going to get it? And it wasn't until the 90s when I realized, wait a minute. I'm in the room with them. When am I going to get it?
I am these people.
I am these people, exactly. Go ahead and continue.
Yeah, that's so true. And I remember the seminar series that we have in common. I remember my wife saying at the very beginning, and here's the thing, by the last day, you'll be in love with all these people. And it was funny because her ex, who was a very odd gentleman, I thought at the time, and really had nothing that I thought I had in common with him, she said, even him. Right? You guys will both be in love with each other by the last day. And I was like, yeah, that's happening. And sure enough, by the last day, like, everybody's like, I love you, man. And nobody wanted to ever part from each other.
Yeah.
We just wanted to hang around with each other forever. And that's because we were able to see the truth of who they are. We were able to realize that they were our brother and our sister. And they were us. They were just another aspect of us expressing in another body. And that we actually were kind of like the same person, just appearing to be different.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's but getting to the work and doing the work are two different things. Hearing the work and doing the work are two different things.
Oh, yeah.
There's what I love to share is regular practice, right? Because there's few are the yogis who can sit once and get every answer that they were looking for, you know, every answer. So maybe we should sit down more than once, and we can just sit down daily, whether it be at 15 minutes or an hour or whatever it is, 15 one day and 30 the next, 10 minutes, whatever it is, do we have a regular practice that just is a reminder, is a daily reminder for us to look for the answers that are being provided everywhere we go, within us and without.
Yeah. Now, it's really interesting, too, how in addition to going to these different workshops and seminars trying to do some, you know, again, that self-transformation, you know, move forward and progress in my life, raise my consciousness, try to make my life a better today than it was yesterday, and then tomorrow I'll try to make it better than it is today. I was also working for a Christian radio station, so I was getting some interesting an interesting set of messages from both. They weren't completely diametrically opposed. The one thing that was so fascinating to me, and you sort of alluded to this, I came across a passage from the New Testament about, it says, be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Mm. I thought, what does that mean? That word perfect, what does that mean? And of course, I'm hearing all of these messages about, you know, good and evil and right and wrong and light and dark, the duality, all right?
Right, right.
And I thought, wait a minute. And so I remembered, of course, from the Old Testament. I think it was possibly Psalms. It talks about you know, where God is speaking is, I am that I am. And I thought, okay, now God is neither good nor evil. He's neither light nor dark. He's neither good nor bad. He's neither right nor wrong. And you go to that Old Testament passage and he says, I am that I am. Well, then God is, he just is, right? God just is, right?
Right.
All right. Well, then that word perfection, be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect, doesn't that mean just to be who you are? Mm-hmm. Not to be a good person, not to be a sinner saved by grace, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. Just be who you are. And even today, In this pluralistic, philosophically pluralistic world in which we live, especially here in this country, we've got a lot of folks who don't buy that. And I was talking with a guest just the other day, I said that if you believe in that philosophy of the sacrifice, do you honestly believe that you had no value prior, but now that you have accepted the sacrifice, now you have value? Think again. You were priceless before. That's why the sacrifice was made in the first place.
Right.
Do you find a lot of people, really, they've been beaten down so much by their environment, by the people around them, especially as children growing up, through the various abuses, among other things, that they've just gotten to that point, and maybe this is one of the reasons why, sadly, our suicide rate, especially in this country, is just, it's skyrocketing amongst all ages and professions, etc.
Yeah, it's just the feeling of being alone, right? So it's the sacrifice you were talking about is the awakening to the part of them that realizes that they're perfect. And sometimes they do that through Jesus, and then they say, oh, well, now that I've accepted Jesus, now everything's cool, right?
Mm-hmm,
but
yeah.
Either way, it's an awakening, right? So I was the one that read the Bible, and then I heard what was coming from the pulpit, and I was just like, these are two different things. Like, I don't get, like, how could you've read that and got that? I just was able to see the metaphors and see the teachings in a way that most preachers and most churches weren't getting, and we were reading the same exact thing. And the suicide rate is up because each of those people are feeling like they're alone. They're just not knowing that just the person next to them, that they don't even know if they reached out to that person and just grabbed their arm and said, I'm having these thoughts right now, what can you tell me? That person would be able to tuck them down from the ledge. But they don't do that because they feel this aloneness that's been bred and bred through religion, through society, through everything, you know, this aloneness and instead of at oneness that you speak of and that I speak of. You know, we're all connected. If you're in pain, I'm in pain, which means all you have to do is turn to your left or turn to your right and tell me that me, whoever's sitting next to you, because we're all connected, that you're in this pain and I'm going to be there for you.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's the disconnect of feeling so alone right now. I don't feel like anybody sees me. I don't feel like anybody cares. And if I took my life, no one would even miss me. That's the underlining thought. And I know because I've been there twice, and I talk about that in my book, like literally being to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, Angel, like literally have saved me, like pulled me. I had my foot over the off ramp of the freeway. Like, I looked down, I saw the cars going zhoom, zhoom, and I realized that the big truck, if I jumped in front of a big truck, that they would hit me, and there's no way I could live through that. And so I was going, and I had a foot over when somebody grabbed me and pulled me down, and then a conversation happened helped me realize that they were an angel that had been sent to save me. And as soon as I had that realization in the restroom after speaking with them for a while and it came out, they were gone, of course. So, right, I had what I needed to have, and then I chose life instead of death. When I went outside of the building, I could go left and go back to the freeway overpass or go right and go home. And I went home because they told me and got through to me that I was never alone. I never had been alone, and I'm not alone now. And that I do make a difference. I will make a difference, and people need to learn from what I'm here to teach. And so that was a higher calling and a higher path. Mm. Aloneness, what I was feeling.
Yeah, I can certainly appreciate the story, and of course, the thought is, Clarence, where are you, Clarence? You know, where'd you go? You know, I want to thank you.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those things where, and folks, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it, okay? Jimmy Stewart and It's a Wonderful Life, Clarence, you'll figure it out. It's a great movie. Makes me cry every time. I kid you not. I tear up every single time because there is a part in each one of us, and I like to consider myself a very optimistic person. In spite of everything that I see, and we've talked about seeing the material world around us, in spite of everything that I see and hear, I still hold out hope that we aren't going to destroy ourselves for the sixth time, that we are going to collectively, or at least the majority of us, are going to say, you know what, we're not doing this again. We're going to go a different way. We're going to make this work for everybody. We're going to make some changes. I mean, I think it's great that we have this wonderful document that has been governing us, shall we say, for 240-some-odd years. But I also ask the question, who says this is the only way? You know, there are, what, maybe four or five different isms that permeate the planet right now. You know, you've got your communism, you got your socialism, you got your democracy, you've got, you know, and then you have variations on a theme, right?
Yeah.
Well, who says these are the only ways? And I'm not talking about ways that are going to enslave people, that are going to continue to, you know. I guess what I'm trying to say is it's time for us to move forward from survival mode into, and this is, I've coined this word, thrival mode. I want to thrive. I want to be able to jump in a truck with the travel trailer with the wife and the dog. I want to drive and just have a great time and enjoy myself, giving back as I go along, talking with people who are making changes in their lives that's changing the world around them because they want a better world for themselves and their families and their children and their children's children and so forth. And I want to experience these people. I want to get out there amongst them and say, hey, you're not alone. What you're doing is great. And I want other people to know that what you're doing, that I want other people to know that you're doing this stuff. They're doing the work that we're talking about.
Yeah.
And they're changing their lives. By the way, there's some old wives tales that you've probably heard before. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Uh-huh.
That's a lie. That's a lie. But right. It's actually the caveat is if you choose to let the words hurt you, they will. Some people, right. They've gotten to the place where, you know, you can say whatever you want. It doesn't matter. I know that none of that is true because I'm trusting in my inner self. And then the other one is you can't change other people. I found out that's a lie. But it's not something that you do intentionally. When we go within and we change ourselves, we change the people around us. There are people going to say, Keith, wow, can I hang with you for the next 20 years? This would be great just to you and I sit and chat over coffee or drinks or a dinner, what have you, and just work this stuff. Ah, that'd be great. I'd love to do that. And then there are going to be those people who are going, Keith, you're a nutball. We'll see you. Bye-bye. You have changed these people. Because they've had to come to grips with themselves.
Right.
Talk to us about those aspects.
Well, there's a couple things you said that just really stood out. And one is there's no only one way to anything. There's no only one way to anything. If you want to cross the street and go to the store, you could go to the light and then cross in the crosswalk. You could jaywalk. You could pole vault. You could skip there. You could dance there. You could walk backwards there. You could bounce off of cars on your way there. There's a million ways you can get to the store, but the way that you choose to get to the store, and then when you safely get to the store, that's all that matters. And so that's how I feel about the path to spirit, God, universe, whatever you want to call it, right? Is there's no one and only one way path to that. And that was the piece that I read that book, called the Bible, and I was like, what are they reading? Like, I don't get it. Like Jesus said over and over again, a million different ways, as you believe, it is done unto you. Pray, believing that you have, and you'll receive, right? If you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could move a mountain, right? He said so many different ways. It happens as you believe.
Mm-hmm.
As you believe. So it's really about what tools, what can I do, what can I read, how can I pray, what can I sit and meditate, what can I do to get to where I believe, right, and change my stinking thinking and get to where I'm believing in good stuff instead of the bad stuff so that I can have that.
Yeah,
I took that one level further, and I interviewed a bunch of people who had near-death experiences, meaning they crossed over. And all of these people, I said, what did you experience? And they all told me a different thing. Some they went to the light and their family was there. Some they went to the light and it was just all like harp music and beautiful floating colors of gorgeousness like you see in the movies that people depict as afterlife. I saw one gentleman said it was black. There was nothing, right? And I heard all different things. And then I said, okay, so the next question is, before you had that experience, what did you believe would happen to you when you died? And the person who believed in the light and the family said, I believed in the light and the family. The person that said the soundscape and the music believed in that. And the person who said, I believed that there was nothing and that it was dark and it was black. That is what happened.
Mm.
So it had literally happened as all of them believed, but only to 100% accuracy. On the other side of that little project I did for me, right, to get my answer to that question, I realized that no truer words have been spoken than it happens as you believe. And then I was like, well, I need to start believing in some good stuff. Right?
Oh, my God, I'm with you there. And that's the other thing that I struggle with this from time to time, especially with my wife, who loves watching high drama, horror films. I mean, she's really has been for years into The Walking Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another one called Helix, where this virus, is released. I did watch, what was that one movie? I can't remember the name of the movie, but it was really popular back in the late 60s, early 70s. And it was where this meteor had come through and crashed on the Earth, and there was this virus that was in the meteor, and they Andromeda strain. That was it.
Yeah.
And all these, and it's like, okay, that was intriguing. That was interesting. But today, when I'm watching whether television programs or movies, and they're along that line, even the science fiction, which I love science fiction, Star Trek and that genre. But when it gets into the post-apocalyptic stuff, and then especially if it's a television series that goes on and on and on, it's like, where's the end game in this thing? I'm bored.
Yeah.
I remember, and I shared this, and I have to tell you that when I was working for the Christian station, I was hearing, of course, all this stuff about Armageddon and the end of the world and Satan coming and all of these things. And I kept hearing that. And I finally walked up to someone, and one of the ministers, one of the programmers, and I said, you know, I keep hearing about all of this stuff that's supposed to happen. Is there anything that I personally can do to help facilitate the bringing about of these events so we can move on to something else? Because this story is getting boring. I kid you not. I am dead serious about that, because I thought, come on, You know, yeah. And
well, here's the good news. I've done it. in this book called Walking with My Angels, by Keith, a true story by Keith Leon, I literally share like all the things we talked about.
Yeah,
suicide. Add drug addiction. Add alcohol addiction. Add manic depression because my mom was, you know, manic depressive in the bed. Add I missed little sister being murdered. You know, loss. Add anything that you've experienced that you've been through or fear that you may. Any of that, I was vulnerable and honest and have told in this book. Not only what happened, but how on earth I was able to get through it. And my wife and I met, and we were on our first date, and I just told her just a piece of my upbringing and the drama that was, mm-hmm. right? The kind of drama you're talking about.
Yeah.
She looked at me and said, I don't know. Okay, after hearing just some of what you've been through, I don't know how you can sit in front of me, a person that's either not dead on drugs or in jail, but how you could be positive in any way right in front of me right now. Could you be... This what I you appear to be one of the more positive people that I've ever met, and how you could even be in that place, having experienced what you experienced, is beyond me, and I'm looking forward to finding out why.
Oh, you know? Wow.
And that was like the tipping point, tip off of our relationship, and the level and the place at which we've taken it ever since, and became together, difference makers on the planet and transformational leaders, and done all the seminars we talked about together, and done the work and done all the relationship work that we need to do constantly to become closer instead of grow apart. And all of those pieces and all of that is in the book, because I'm not sure a more vulnerable work has been put out there. Where there was literally nothing. Like when I was reading back, you know, after the editors went through, and I kind of channeled through everything with mm-hmm. the angels, like, and so when I read it back, I was like, oh my God, I shared that. Like, am I okay with sharing that? Did I really say, I was in shock at like things that I shared. And I went to my team, like, do you think this is cool? And they were like, no, like, do you realize how those people who are suicidal, those people who are experiencing drug addiction, alcohol addiction right now, those people who get this in their hands, like, let that be what shows them, you know? And now you are able to speak about those things in your event, you know, so they can ask questions in real time about it. And if they don't know about it, they can't ask questions about it. They can't get your feedback about it. So I was just like, so it is. And went with the most vulnerable piece of work I've ever experienced, let alone did myself in this book.
Well, I will give you some words of encouragement from this standpoint. You know, we've talked about the similarities between us as human beings, and we've talked about the differences between us as human beings. And one of the things, I share on this program, if someone were listening to all of the interviews that I've done over the 40 years I've been in broadcasting, they probably could write my unauthorized biography. Because I share about myself. I try not to share about other people, like my wives and brother and sisters and so forth and parents. But I came to this conclusion partly during the period of 15 years at the Christian Station. I came to this conclusion based upon my own personal musings. God is omniscient, omnipresent, and omniscient, omnipresent, and what is the third one? I can't remember the third one. In any event, he knows all, sees all, and hears all, and so forth. God already knows everything about me, the light and the dark, okay? Now, there are about 7.9 billion people on the planet today. What difference does it make if all 7.9 billion people know all of the stuff about me? Because God already knows. And besides, the majority of the 7.9, they don't care. They're too busy surviving. They don't care. It doesn't matter. And those that do care and try to use it for nefarious means, you know, I hope you don't, you know, but I can't stop you. It's like the one gal came to me when they wanted to pray for me for my visual impairment, my legal blindness. We want to pray for you for your healing. And I refused.
I was challenged by that once too. I thought, how could you refuse? I said, well, I look at it this way. God knows where I am. I will accept a collect call. I'm right here. But my purpose in life is not to be healed. My purpose in life is to serve, is to try to make this a better place through programs like this, through with people like you. And if he, she, it deems that I should get better vision than I've had all my life, I'm here. And in 1996, I got a lens implant. And voila, technology caught up with me. And I say, yeah, that was God. Okay.
Yeah.
But that was the feeling I had, was that we all have the same emotions, but we all have different stories. Okay? Mm-hmm. So your story of fear is different than my story of fear, but we both experienced fear. And your story and my story of joy, same scenario. So it is important. I think your team is absolutely right that, you need to share this stuff, because there are those who will relate to your story as well as what you felt, what you experienced. And I'll often chuckle at 20 and 30 year old celebrities who write their memoirs, and I'm going, what are you doing? And you want to put that in a cabinet somewhere and release it and add to it when you're in your 60s, that's fine, but you haven't really lived yet. And yet I know some folks who are in their 20s and 30s have been through some pretty amazing stuff. And I say that tongue in cheek. I haven't written mine yet. I'm waiting till my 80s, because then I'll have 20 years left of life. I have to outlive my great-grandmother who lived to be 100. And so I have about 41 years to go. Minimum. I say that minimum. I'm not going to say I will live forever. I don't know about you, Keith, but I don't know that I would want to live forever. I mean, not just the aspect of, people around you that you get to know and then they are gone and you're still here, but it's more like, oh, hey, look, I've had a good time. I don't know about you, but if I walk outside the station today and I get hit by a bus, I'm good to go. I hope that doesn't happen, but, there's still a lot I want to do, but I'm still good to go. And maybe if there is an afterlife and then there's another life like reincarnation, maybe I'll get to continue. But I've done all I can up to this point. I've done the best I can. I often joke about Judgment Day and facing God. And I would have two responses to God. I would say, look, you created me and you set up the rules and I did the best I could. And if it wasn't up to snuff, it wasn't up to par, hey, you're going to do with me what you will anyway. However, you created me. You set up all these scenarios. So really, this is on you. So
right.
I find this this whole aspect of trying to find out who we are and where our place is in the world fascinating. What about you? It seems to me like you found your place. Seems to be working for you. Are you still in awe from time to time when you come across these mentors of yours? Or glitter sort of dropped off, and hey, these are people, they put their pants on one leg at a time, just like I do, and it's just great that I get to commiserate with them or to commune with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still in awe of the wisdom that I receive, but not shocked when they say yes to mentor me, because I'm just blessed enough to have some of the ones that I always wanted my whole life I had put them on a pedestal, for so many years. And then they were the ones that drove it into my head that I had worth, right?
Mm-hmm.
My story, that what I shared, and they said, what you teach has equal, if not greater value than that which I teach. And these were the people that I had way, way in the top pedestal. And they just kind of say that over and over and over till I really received it. And then once I did that, then more in shock of awe of the wisdom that they say, where I just go, ooh, that's good. And I love when I say something and they say, ooh, that's good, right? Because it's just a reminder that it's just, it goes back and forth, and we're all masters pretending to be students. and we're all, you know, students with masters. But I think the first one more than the second one. You know, when we're in student mode, it's really the main teaching is to remind us that everything that we have is within us. We need to look no further than within for the answer to any question.
Before we run out of time, I would like for you, if you wouldn't mind, share with us a little bit about not only how you shared some of how you and your wife came together as far as that conversation, that wonderful conversation that she chose, you know, I'm going to hang around. I want to see what happens. You know, it's like going to a movie that never ends. And it's like, hey, this is pretty neat, you know. But tell me about her and your connection with her. And again, to the best of your ability, because obviously she could only share her story the way she could. What about her story and where she came from that maybe, because you mentioned the secret and the law of attraction, that brought the two of you magnetically, if you will, together?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did. we both did. My first wife, which talk about this in the book, was, you know, my angel told me this girl up the street was going to be my wife, and that I was going to marry her. And so I paid attention to this little girl up the street, and I knew in my head what she looked like when she was older. And then I met that woman, and then sure enough, I told her this story, and she did end up being my wife. And she was my wife for 13 and a half years, and at least three of those years were good. And and we just were like in oil and water for so many ways. And then eventually something happened that was just so not cool that I just was like, I'd rather be alone than be with someone who would do that. And so I realized as I went within, and this miracle happened to tell me it was time to move on. And I just got so clear that, well, my angel said that would be my wife, didn't say that'd be my wife forever. So I had 13 and a half years with my practice wife. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I took time to kind of lick my wounds and heal, but more importantly say, well, what was my part in this relationship not working? Ooh, wow, there's a lot of work to do. Right?
Yeah.
So I did the work that I needed to do to become the person that would deserve a woman like Mara, the woman that I'm with now. And so I did the inner work. I did everything I needed to do. And I created a list of everything that I wanted, all the qualities, everything that I wanted in my perfect mate, the perfect one for me. And I reviewed that list of qualities, and there was three things on there that I realized, if like attracts like, then I'll never find her until I deal with these three things. So I went back to work, dealt with those three things that I needed to clean up. And once I could look at that list and say, I am that, I am. I literally am this list.
Mm-hmm.
Then I knew I could pray on it, and I could then go out into the world, and that the universe would bring her to me. And so I knew I was going to meet her at Agape Spiritual Center in Culver City, which was my spiritual center, Reverend Michael Beckwith from The Secret, his place. And I knew I was going to meet her there, so I started going to both services every week. I didn't want to sleep in early service and miss her and have to wait months to see her again. So I went to both services for many months until, as I said on my list, her light will enter the room before she does. Sure enough, one day I looked over to the door, and this light walked in, and then she walked in behind it. And she was everything I had written physically, you know, long brown hair, dark skin, big nose, big booty. Like, I was very specific. I wanted to make sure I knew it was her, right? So everything that I had said, she was, and now she was walking right towards me. And then I was standing there next to a gentleman, and come to find out that gentleman who I had just become friends with was best friends with her. And then he introduced us, and then we ended up through, you know, me going to sing the next week, and her wanting to sing at Agape, saying, "Hey, you know, I can help you do that," and got her phone number, and you know, a whole bunch of things happened that we finally ended up on this date, and then actually three dates in a row because we booked one date, and then Mara found out she was available on another date, but we had already booked that date. And then I said, she said, what if we do both? And then there was a time in between where she needed to move. So we ended up having three first dates, and they were all like booked on that first call that we had, which was pretty cool. And so on the date, and after we got to know the dates and we got to know each other, I asked her, why did she move all the way from Vermont and Boston to California? She said, people keep asking me that. They kept asking me that, and all I could come up with was, I came here for the sunshine. And my eyes watered. This is on date three. My eyes watered, and she said, what? And I said, ever since I was a child, my mom called me her sunshine. Yeah, and it was so obvious that we were just meant to be. I knew it right away. She didn't. She was just dating. She was just having a good time. She wanted no relationship. She was the dude. I was the woman. I wanted a relationship. I wanted her, and I wanted her now. And so we hung out for a while, and then we realized that she, too, had done a very specific process that I did. I call mine the list. She called hers a relationship plan, which is like a marketing plan, but with me. And in both of our kind of lists, the description of the person, qualities and inside and out, could not be more perfect, so much that when I saw hers, I thought she had stalked me and wrote down everything. I thought for sure she had stalked me, because it was everything that I am. Yeah, so energetically, it couldn't be more than a match, including down to the point where we're both willing to do the work play that it takes to keep growing together instead of apart in a relationship. And we just celebrated our 20th anniversary, and I'm still head over heels crazy in love with this woman, and she still puts up with me, so it's all good.
Well, you know, I'm sitting here listening to your story going, you stole my script, pal. I'm not kidding you. I am not kidding you, because before I met my second wife, who is my present wife, I wrote out a list of the attributes, both physical as well as relationship-wise, that I wanted, that I didn't have in my first marriage. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't necessarily that I was looking to marry again. I was just looking for someone I could share time with and experience and so on and so forth. And we've been together. Matter of fact, I remember when I met her. I didn't want to scare her off at this gathering, so I walked up to her, and of course, the event that we were a part of, you know, we participated in the event together. It was interesting how that happened. And so at the end of the evening, I didn't want to scare her off, so I walked up to her and I gave her one of my cards, and I said, I'd love to see you again unless you'd like to go out for coffee now. Well, she had other plans, of course, but she took my card, and I didn't hear from her for 2 or 3 days. So I called the facilitator of the event. I says, you know, so-and-so, is there any way you could get a message to her that I would really like to, because I didn't have her number. I didn't take it. I didn't want to scare her off, you know, kind of that kind of thing. And she finally called, and we spent several nights on the phone for several hours. It was unusual for me, because I never do that. I never really used to do that. Anyway, and one thing led to another, and we've been together since March 14th of 1998. And so it's been over 20 years. But I'm sitting here listening to your story. I'm going, really? A list? Come on. Who does that? Well, you do. And I do. And my wife did the same thing. She had a list too. And we have shared many experiences. She was actually working with her mentor, who is the co-author of a book called Jewel in the Lotus, Sunyata Saraswati. And I got to meet him. And a beautiful man. But that's just incredible. The connections that we make through the intention that we have. And I still remember my first wife telling me, you do realize that you go off into this other relationship, you're going to be carrying with you all of the stuff about this and that and the other thing. You know, it's And I heard that. I really heard that. It was kind of like your list, and you came across these two or three things. You said, oh, I better clean that up. Mm-hmm. Well, I heard this from my wife, and I said, okay, then I'm not going to let that happen. And I swear to you, I've said this to my wife, too. I said, this is my last relationship. It wasn't a situation where I'm making ultimatums or anything, but it was more, if this goes in the toilet, I'm never doing this again. It's just too hard to start over. So I'm doing everything I can to make it work. It's like what you were saying. You know, fix all of the, as much as you can, the stuff that's going on in your life so that you don't take it into that next relationship. And boy, I wish a lot of people would learn to do that, because it's just so much of a waste of money and time and energy and resources to fight. I mean, you see it on a lot of the entertainment nightly shows about celebrities, you know, and the just craziness that they go through. And I know you feel this way. I do, too. When you find someone that has that core commonality with you, that connection with where you want to go and what you want to do with your life and what is so about it, man, it just makes all the difference in the world. It really does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Keith, I would like to thank you so much for giving us so much time on this program. Matter of fact, to our listeners, to that end, you better go to the podcast. If you're just listening to the radio program, not enough. There's more. There is more. So go to the podcast on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Blueberry, etc., and listen to the entire interview. And also, if you and your wife should find yourself out here in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. I know that there's so much more, and we want people to pick up a copy of your book, which again is entitled Walking with My Angels, A True Story. We encourage people to pick up a copy of your book. Go to your website. You have two of them. We're going to be linked to the book website, which is walkingwithmyangelsbook.com. We encourage you go there. You can purchase it through that website. And hopefully people will do that and get in touch with you as well. I want to stay in touch with you because, man, you've got a lot of stuff to say, and we want to continue to have you saying it here on Tell Me Your Story.
Sounds good to me.
Before we let you go, I have three final questions, if I may. The first one is, who is Keith Leon?
I am a loving, trusting, worthy man, living in my heart and sharing my joy.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
You touch and inspire the lives of over 100 million people by sharing my voice, truth, and wisdom.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
To be genuinely authentic, caring, and to love everyone in the world the same as I love my children.
Keith Leon, thank you so much for joining us on the program. Folks, pick up a copy of Walking with My Angels, A True Story, available at Amazon as well as through his website, walkingwithmyangelsbook.com. Keith, again, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love, Talal.